This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Here to Stay or Gone Forever. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. During the pandemic, lots of people have been working from home, and researchers have looked at this moment in global labor history like a field experiment. For some people, it was bad news, but for others, like reporter Jad Slaman, working from home has been really great. Many companies are now considering whether employees should ever return to their cubicles. What do we know about the impact of working from home? Jad picks it up from here.
For me, work from home has kind of been a wonderland. Sure, there's the gnawing dread of a major public health crisis and the economic impact. I worry about my health and losing my job, but I have my cat. I have my piano. I have vodka and a PlayStation right here at what's become work. I do interviews in my yard on a milk crate wearing the same shirt I've worn all week. I record stories, this one included, in my closet. I don't set an alarm most days, waking mostly when the sunbeam creeps from my floor to my pillow. I've also felt more focused, more productive, and I've actually produced more stories than usual during this time. It's incredible, and I very honestly never want it to end. So I set out to see, well, does it have to? Should it? I started by talking to Stanford economics professor Nicholas Bloom. He first started looking into work from home back in 2011 when he found out the unassuming middle-aged Asian student in back of his class was the founding CEO of a giant Chinese company.
It was quoted at that time on NASDAQ, worth about $15 billion.
The company was Ctrip, a Chinese travel booking service akin to Expedia or Priceline. At the time, it had 15,000 employees. The student was entrepreneur James Liang.
James himself was worth like, I don't know, half a billion. I looked him up online and it the first hit that came up was China's 500 richest people, and he was definitely not 500 either.
During a class discussion, James said his company was thinking about work from home. They were expanding and feeling growing pains.
They were paying a fortune for this huge office in downtown Shanghai.
The question for Ctrip wasn't, are we going to take a loss during work from home? It was how big of a loss it would be. Is work from home going to save us enough in rent money to be worth it on balance?
So their view was, yeah, some share of people would start watching the Chinese version of Jerry Springer or Oprah Winfrey or set up their own eBay online firm. You know, the saying is the three great enemies of working from home are the fridge, the television, and the bed.
Nicholas was intrigued. He'd been studying what he called, quote, being nice to people, work policies, and asked James if he could tag along back to China and see how it all played out as part of a study. James had lived and worked in the U.S., and his Shanghai offices turned out to be very American, what Nicholas calls a Dilbertian nightmare, like the comic strip.
Cubicles, you know, canteens, 6-7 floors, probably 3,000-4,000 people in that office.
The daily grind was typical office work, phone calls with clients, dealing with web issues. The company did a pseudo-pilot study of work from home with only 5 employees, and the results were promising.
People worked harder because their parents made them work harder.
Armed with that insight, Ctrip scaled up, asked for volunteers to work from home, and got some 500.
We took the 500 and you randomize them by even and odd birthdays. So people with even birthdays, so if you're born on like the 2nd, the 4th, the 6th, the 8th of the month, go home for 9 months and the odds stay in the office.
So 9 months of travel booking later, Nicholas had the results.
The firm was like amazed. It was not remotely what they're expecting.
When they crunched the numbers, it turned out the homebodies were 13% more productive than the office workers. It was easy to tell by looking at booking numbers, client calls. To put that all in perspective, it's like each and every one of them was working a Saturday half day every week at no cost.
They calculated they were increasing profits by about $2,000 for each employee that was working from home.
So much for the Chinese Jerry Springer. Nicholas looked into where the boost came from. First off, 9 to 5 actually became 9 to 5. Workers worked their full hours.
And the reason is, you know, they weren't hit by commuting problems, or their motorbike broke down, or they took a long lunch break, or they had to leave early to go to the doctors at home. There was much less of those interruptions.
there was much less of any kind of interruption.
They were just more productive per minute, and they said it was quieter and easier to concentrate.
An important caveat here is the volunteers had spare rooms that they could dedicate to work. It's a luxurious solitude not everyone forced into working from home has right now. I'm lucky enough to live alone, only having to deal with my cat begging me to throw her ball. Nicholas, on the other hand, has human children in his workplace.
My youngest is 4, she regularly, I mean, like, this is like 5 to 10 times a day, comes into my office shouting, doo-doo, doo-doo, which is her nickname for me, you know. I'm bored, I want to play, come with me. And then I say, I've got a phone call, I have to work. And she's like, why do you have to work? And I say, daddy has to earn money. Why do you need the money? I have money. She has this like pot of, you know, cents and 2 cents and nickels and dimes.
In his research on C-Trip, Dudu also found way fewer people quit, which was noteworthy since the company had pretty high churn at the time. It seems to suggest that once people started working from home, they started enjoying their jobs more. That's been true for me during these past few months of working from home, and I think it has to do with what I can do when I'm not working. I can take naps.
So I'm just going to go ahead and set an alarm.
I don't think I've ever gotten so much sleep in my adult life. And sleep scientist Sarah Alger tells me I probably needed it.
Interestingly, if you subjectively measure it, you ask somebody, do you feel tired? Do you feel like you're not performing at your best? A lot of the times, they're very inaccurate.
Sarah works at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I had 4 hours of sleep last night, but I'm great. But then you objectively test them, and no, they're not great. They are really showing impairments in their performance.
I tell her about this joyless, solemn cup of coffee I used to have every day in the office pre-pandemic, right around 2 p.m. I got it from our office machine, piping hot, and put in a few ice cubes just to down it like a kid taking cough medicine. Without it, I would get this crazy urge to nap under my desk that I'd have to fight for the rest of the day. Sarah says I was fighting nature.
Your circadian cycle has a natural dip in the afternoon. And so a lot of people think this is the post-lunch dip, and it has to do with them having had a big lunch. But it's really the natural dip in your circadian rhythm when both your homeostatic pressure or need for sleep and your circadian dip in alertness coincide. That's just the best time to try to get one in there.
She's talking about taking a nap. Yeah, for a 30-year-old professional. Sarah's been pushing naps in the workplace for years.
Well, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that when you go to sleep, it's not like a computer. So you're not shutting your brain off. The brain is actually very active.
She breaks it down for me. A short power nap, like 20 minutes, gives your brain something caffeine cannot.
Sleep spindles.
They're bursts of brain waves that last half a second or so. You can actually see muscle twitching associated with it.
That are thought to help reactivate memory traces.
The more you remember, the more you learn. Sarah says napping is good for companies. It can boost productivity and problem solving, and it's got these real health benefits for employees. But even if you're not into napping, working from home could mean that you could use your time more effectively under any circumstance.
I mean, being British, you know, many times I've come into work with a stinking hangover, and, you know, by 2 p.m, I'm done. So then the question is, if I'm in the office, I kind of feel like I should stick around. If I'm at home, quite honestly, I just, you know, clock off.
That's Nicholas Bloom again from Stanford.
I can actually productively use that time. I can maybe go clean or do the laundry or, you know, go for a run.
That's not the kind of thing you can do when you're working in an office. When my brain was fried, I would just scroll through bits of Reddit I'd already seen or stare at YouTube videos on autoplay. Nicholas says it's okay for our brains to need breaks.
We all know it's very hard to concentrate all the time. There's lots of studies that psychologists do about there's only so much energy, I believe, your brain can put into allowing you to concentrate.
He says work from home lets us just kind of accept that and fall into a more natural rhythm of work and rest.
So my day is structured slightly differently. I start earlier, work for a bit, go for a run, work for a while, actually see my kids over dinner in the early evening, and then sometimes work a bit later at night.
Talking work from home with Nicholas, it sounded like all this was a win-win all around. But then he tells me about what happened after the C-Trip study.
End of the 9-month experiment, when they rolled it out to the entire firm, 50% of the original group that volunteered to go home and had been at home for 9 months decided they wanted to come back into the office. You know, the big complaint was loneliness and depression.
It turned out that, especially among the younger workers, being home meant this social loss. Nicholas says work for them was this important part of their social lives.
So, you know, if you're born in Philly and go to a university in New York and you're working, say, in San Francisco, you may not know a lot of people in San Francisco, and your workplace is a key part of your social life. And if you're cut off from it, it's painful, actually.
Nicholas's study found choice is hugely important when it comes to work from home. With C-Trip, after the workers who wanted to go back to the office left the experimental group, the productivity of the hardcore homebodies on average actually rose again to 25%, like they were working full Saturdays every week. So there's a real case for permanent work from home for some people. Laura Hambly is an organizational and industrial psychologist who tries to figure out who those people are. To figure out if work from home will work, Laura uses a kind of personality test. Introverts, perhaps unsurprisingly, do very well. For them, just being at work takes work.
It's because there's people all around, and there's interruptions and conversations, and they may like people, but they need to recharge from that. So they feel kind of, when they're working from home, it's kind of a dream for them in terms of they get that focus, they get the time on their own.
That's kind of me. After 2 years on the job, I can count my water cooler conversations on one hand. Laura also found confident workers thrive as well, those with high task confidence, as in you don't typically need to ask a colleague to look over your work.
So someone who's new in their career and just starting their very first job and then COVID hits and they're not a confident person to begin with, this would be difficult. Remote work would put them in a very awkward situation.
She found, though, that most people are somewhere in the middle, most productive with a few days in the office and a few at home, which jibes coincidentally with what public health experts want in the new normal: staggered shifts, reduced occupancy. The bottom line, though, she says, is most people won't know until they try it. If there's any silver lining in this mass work from home experience, it's that more people are trying it, forced to get over this fear.
It's fear that people aren't productive. But you should be able to know whether people are productive based on how you evaluate their performance and how you measure performance, regardless of whether you see them or not.
That story was reported by Jad Slayman.